Welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps. I'm your tour guide, Jody, and today we'll take a trip through this week's episodes of Real Housewives of Atlanta, Real Housewives of Potomac, Teen Mom OG, and Married at First Sight. Now, if you're not joining me over on Patreon, what are you waiting for? Not only are there 20-plus episodes on everything from additional show recaps and documentary deep dives, but I have true crime stories like Lori Erica Ruff, guests sharing real-life love after lockups, brushes with the supernatural, my 600-pound life, the Asante brothers. I mean, who doesn't love a cringe watch of that? And this week, I'm bringing you some Real Housewives of New York, Jersey Shore, and more listener secrets. It's only $5 a month, and you're supporting me being able to bring you this very podcast that you're listening to right now. So head on over to patreon.com/realitytvpod to get in on all the good stuff. Also, make sure that you join all the other Claremont Apples from 90 Day Fiancé's Evelyn's Precious Apple Orchard over on Facebook. Find the link in the show notes or search Reality TV Podcast on Facebook. And of course, I'm always tweeting and on Instagram all week at Reality TV Pod everywhere. Whew, that must be what Lisa Rinna and now Shannon Bedore, have you seen this? Must be what they feel like when they're on QVC shilling dusters and frozen food. But you know what? Good for them. Someday, I'd like to think that I can be on Shark Tank and Lori will sign me up because if you haven't heard this little story before, I should have had my idea patented way back in 1990. I was in fifth grade, and for our invention project, my idea was that mayonnaise should be sold in squeeze bottles with a little slit in the cap so when you turn it over and squeeze, just like ketchup, your mayonnaise would come out in one thin stream. And what do you know? Hellman's is now making millions off of me and all the other millions of Midwesterners who enjoy a potato salad and mayo-based side dishes. You're welcome, Central Standard Time Zone. Well, shall we start with some ladies who, although they're not in my time zone, I know for a fact that they enjoy some mayo. That's right, let's begin with the ladies of Atlanta in the Real Housewives of Atlanta Reunion Part 2. I think I'm just going to start the podcast every week with Nene's sound clip where she's saying, "Oh, I want to fight the battle. I want to fight the battle. Oh, I'm going to fight the battle." She's talking about Kimberly, spelled Kimber L-E-I-G-H, Zolciak Bierman, and without further ado, there she is. Dressed like a dollar store Barbie knockoff in the car that only the IRS and Kim know how she can afford are Kim and Croy. They are that annoying couple that always has to be together. We all have friends like this, but in Real Housewives terms, let's say they are the Alex McCord and Simon Van Camp in season one, Real Housewives of New York. Also in that group would be Aviva and Reed, whatever season it was, right before Aviva was formally diagnosed with her 15 minutes of fame-induced asthma. We also have Eva, who is backstage. She's checked the frick out because she's about to have Bravo's very first reunion baby, unless you count whenever Joe Gorga shows up on set. But already on the set, the ladies are going at it, whether Portia should have put something in Marlo's face the costume party. You really could call this whole reunion a costume party because the women are dressed in all different degrees of formal. Candy looks great. But I did a side-by-side, I posted it. She's a dead ringer for the princess who was supposed to marry Eddie Murphy in Coming to America. Remember, she's like hopping on one foot and barking. Now when I look back at it, I'm like, that's not very politically correct, if that's what you call it. But anyway, she looks exactly like her, and she looks phenomenal. But Sheree, she is wearing acres of pink silk that is covering every square inch of her body as if she's Amish, and Nene is wearing an ice skating costume. I hate that see-through material. A lot of the housewives wear it on their dresses. I don't know where they buy it. I don't like it. It's just my preference, but overall, everyone looks beautiful. I mean, these women just are beautiful in Atlanta. Even Marlo, whose dress was a little too foo-foo. That's what my mom would call it. It's a little too foo-foo for me. But the looks altogether resulted in a stage that it kind of looked messy. It was just a lot of excess fabric. Why the train on your dresses, ladies, when you're going to be sitting the whole time? Unless you're prepared for a grand walk-off. Things that make you go, But let's get back to the answer to the question Portia was asked about Marlo. She says, I could care less. Oh, Portia. This is, to me, just like when people say acrossed. Like, there's no T on the end of acrossed. But Marlo and Kenya both jump on that opportunity, acting like they were so smart to catch on to her mistake, which is quite ironic considering both of these women's, let's use the word platform, you know, use a word from Kenya's pageant days and Marlo's supposed former career days. They both tout this classy persona, but they are the first to break the rules of class and sophistication and take people down in the rudest ways possible, which is why they make great TV, but horrible employees to Bravo. Okay, we gotta talk about Marlo explaining away her criminal history. She started off saying it was 2 charges, then it was 2 or 3, and then she says, and that's how you get to 7. Okay, she just yada yada yada'd her way out of criminal charges, and somewhere along the line, she may or may not have slit someone's face open. What I'm really dying to know if Marlo was in the same pod that we saw on 60 Days In. And I'm wondering if she was pod boss. Did she partake in Whip It Wednesday? I'm going to assume yes, but I would really like to know for sure. So maybe we can all put our heads together, get some investigative work, and find out, was she in, what was that, pod F? 400 block? 300 block? It's already gone a week, but okay, we're going to get on this. Okay, now I'm going to say yes, yes to Candy and Portia. Finally, fingers crossed, putting this drugged and rape allegation from last season to bed. Phaedra's been properly punished, but Portia has only given these insincere, cleverly worded apologies. I disagree with Candy that Portia never apologized, because she did, a few times actually, but those half-assed apologies like, I'm sorry if my actions hurt you, or I'm sorry if you took offense to what I said, those don't really count. But I have hope that this truce with the handshake might be, fingers crossed, the death knell. You know Andy liked it because he was struggling to come up with a witty comment about it, and he's doing like the tennis head back and forth thing. I kind of want to ask this question. I'm debating whether I should. I'm curious what your opinion of Andy is. Just what are your thoughts on him? We'll leave it at that. I'm just interested to hear. Now, back from a commercial break, I love the behind-the-scenes stuff. Interesting that the name tags are all thrown on the floor, like there's no budget for scotch tape, or maybe one of the ladies stole it to tape her boobs in a dress. I don't know. But we find our way back to Sheree, who's sneaking in to tell Kim Zolciak what's been going down. Oh, I'm sorry, Kim Bierman, what's been going down. I was shocked to see that Croy is the only member of Kim's hashtag squad. I mean, if he were really good at this styling sidekick thing, he would have told Kim that she should ditch those sweatpants that were hiked up to her boobs. Is that the look these days? I can tell you that my 74-year-old mom should be collecting royalties if it is a new fashion craze. She should be on the cover of Vogue or AARP at the very least, because she's been hiking her pants up there since 1983. Higher the waistband, closer to a senior discount. Now, you know Kim, no matter what, she will always be after Nene. She hasn't even seen Nene, and she's already calling her a big bitch and coming in with a nasty attitude. I mean, what happened to that happy-go-lucky Kim? Just kidding. She's always been a monster. I can't wait for the day she can't keep up with her lipo and cool sculpting, and then she's the one who is a big bitch. It's gonna happen. Same way housewives criticize other housewives for being old, as if they themselves are immune from aging and they have the secret to the Benjamin Button factory. Now, let's get back to the couch. We get a flashback to Nene season, from Greg being sick to the white gays and guys and girls and Surrey with a fringe on top party to the epic Uber comment and firing. All during this montage, Nene is doing this eye roll thing that I don't know how she does. It's like one eye is going up, one's going to the side. But Andy turns her comment into Candy being hypocritical for defending her Uber moment. Andy, I mean, for real, wake up. We just spent the entire last segment going over just that. It's over, move on. Now, the Marlo money question. That's the Andy I knew was hiding in there during this reunion. Where does Marlo get her money? Okay, she says she's dated a billionaire. She invested well, and she has Simply Marlo LLC. What the hell is going on? Kenya says porn, but I Googled Simply Marlo LLC and I did not find porn. I found Marlo talking about Kenya asking her to get her a Birkin bag, and Marlo had receipts, so I think that is a solid point for Marlo. You know what that reminded me of, though? You know my favorite blind item site, blindgossip.com? Well, they had a blind item, it's probably maybe at least a year ago, about a housewife having a lot of Birkins, but they were all fake. Now, I don't know if that one was ever solved. I'd have to go back and find it. But I wondered at the time if it was an Atlanta lady, but my God, I was kind of hoping that it was going to be LVP. I don't think it would be her because she can clearly afford them, but how amazing would that be if that was her? But now I'm wondering, is it Marlo? Is it Kenya? I want to know who's got the fake Birkins, because if there were ever going to be some housewife shade throwing, it would be about a Birkin. Okay, but back to the reunion at hand. Freaking Croy in that stupid Balenciaga hat. I don't even know if that's how you say it, but I don't care because you know what? I looked that up. That simple white cotton baseball hat he was wearing is $350. For $350, it better come with a secret pocket filled with $325 and some super cash to use next month, like Old Navy suckers us all into thinking that we're going to use, but then we forget we have it and find it in a drawer next year. But that damn hat, it was pissing me off so much that I almost missed the mysterious one-eyed African comment. I mean, did you ever think you would hear women in 2018 talking about a one-eyed African like it was life or death in one breath? And then cut to Kim, who's still fidgeting around in her sweats and red makeup bag, shout out to Anfisa, that looked like a mailbox. Now, I feel like I need to talk about this D-Challenge thing because I'm going to be honest, I did not get it at all. It sounded like it was going to be like a never have I ever kind of thing, but then Candy was rapping. What am I missing? I'm such a naive suburban mom with this stuff. So someone tell me what this is. Is it like the ice bucket challenge? Someone better tell me before I challenge my kid's teacher to the D challenge and get him kicked out of public school, because I can't homeschool. I mean, I need to check into the same rehab that Butch was in on Teen Mom within a week. It can't happen. So someone tell me what this D challenge is. Help me check myself before I wreck myself, please. Okay, maybe we can check Cynthia while we're at it, actually, because she's in the hot seat about that Will guy. Now, I told you a few months ago how I think Will looks like Nathan from Teen Mom 2, and how I sense the same slimy quality in him, and all the other ladies did too. The only good thing we got from seeing all these flashbacks of Will was that awkward kiss scene in the car. Oh, God, that is the worst. We've all had those moments where like the timing is off and there's that weird like, and there's no smooth recovery for anyone. It reminded me of, I hope I haven't told this story before, but I had a mom at a parent-teacher conference once And I went to greet her and shake her hand and kind of scoot past her to close the door. And the next thing I knew, we were hugging. The only choice I had was to just like tap it out on her back and just like enjoy the embrace. I mean, it wasn't awkward for her because, I mean, she was the one who like brought me in for it, but I had like this out-of-body experience as it was happening, like, and this is an awkward holding pattern. I can only imagine that's what Cynthia probably had to do when she was having sex with Peter back in the day. Now, Cynthia's taste in men, Will, Peter, she's got these blinders on when it comes to what she deems acceptable with a guy she's with. She is attracted to smooth talkers. And as much as I think Leon, Noelle's dad, is attractive, he has a smooth talking thing about him too. Like, she likes the slick Willies. And this Willie was actually a Will, and he was slick in his game. Fell right into that one, didn't even plan it. Okay, now enough of Will. It's time to talk about Kim. She's squeezed into a red dress. Every inch of her skin is spanked at least twice. And I gotta say, people are always like, oh, wow, look at Kim and Croy. They're annoying, but they're so hot for each other. And oh, look, he's making comments like, oh, she's hot, right? That's not normal. What is going on between them? It's not okay. Something is very weird. And what is in that red solo cup that she's got to have on her at all times? It's not a thing. Let it go. I like to think that there's got to be some crazy, out of this world documentary that's going to be made about Kim and Croy and all these children that they're bringing into whatever it is that goes on behind their paper-thin walls of delusion and extended lines of credit. It's the only thing that's going to make sense. And we're all going to need answers someday. And you know what? Maybe there is an answer for it, but I don't follow Kim or Brielle on social media for the same reasons I don't keep up with the Kardashians. I just feel like it takes it a step or 12 too far. So I never really get to see the extent of Kim's transformation and work up close. She wasn't in too many scenes this season, so I didn't get to just stare at her the same way. Let's be honest, I catch myself staring at moms at the pool who have like 5 or 6 kids and no cellulite or stretch marks. So when I saw Kim's face sitting on that couch, I was able to screenshot it, freeze it, really take it in. And Andy saying she looked 10 years younger, no objection. She does not look younger. She just has an entirely different face. And I think the reason that she keeps all of her hair in her face like that, it's just to shield it. She doesn't want us to see her face all the way. Like, her hair is her privacy fence, if you will. Now, thank God Andy called her out on her lips, because what is the end game? Great question. Is it just that she wants to inflate them like water wings so her little toddlers can grab on and float along? I mean, between her butt, her boobs, her lips, she could probably make some good cash, a little side hustle, just float around the pool escorting kids like a lazy river style, just a full-sized human flotation device, seats, what, 2, 4, 6, okay? You know what? Maybe she's onto something. Maybe this is just an investment in her body for her future profession, earning minimum wage at a seasonal water park. But for now, she is the elephant in the room. Ba-dum-bum-ching. Stupid Portia thinks she's the only one who notices that everyone keeps saying elephant in the room and there's 4 gigantic elephants under the table. Okay, Portia, like the set designer just so happened to choose that table for no other reason. Friggin' Portia. She probably still thinks she has an actual Aunt Florence who sneaks into her undies every month and, ooh, leaves her a present. Now, on the flip side, you have Kim, who she may not be stupid, but she is nasty and vindictive. The comparison of her to Sarah Huckabee Sanders by Andy was spot on. Kim will try to spin and dodge and curve away from what she said, and she thinks we're all none the wiser. Cynthia actually stood up for herself, which was a nice change of pace, but then it blew the hell up because Nene starts yelling at Kim about Kim taking a photo of her car in the handicap spot. But it really went to a whole new level when Kim started lying, saying that she didn't take the photo when they have her on film showing a photo on her phone. Kim appears to be a pathological liar, and next week looks amazing because they start into her about her strokes and remember when she had like the maybe cancer? So Candy is going to go off on her, and you know when even Candy snaps, shit has gone sideways because Candy really can keep herself really cool and collected to a point, but when she loses it and her voice starts shaking like mine when I get nervous or really upset, whew, watch out. I mean, she is Mama Joyce's daughter after all, so she has got it in her. Now, while I have you Housewives fans here, let's just head north to the ladies of kinda, sorta, somewhere close to Potomac. Coming in hot from the press conference from hell last week on Real Housewives of Potomac, we have Karen's assistant, Matt. His eyebrows are morphing into Tinsley's as they're just seconds away from flying off this guy's face in just shock at what he's seeing. Karen's hair and body is flying all over the table like a goblin or whatever is in Harry Potter. And Robin and Giselle are just stoking the Grand Dame's fire with oohs and ahs. Kind of reminded me of Marlo and Sheree on Real Housewives of Atlanta a couple years ago. Remember on vacation, they were all like just ooh, ooh, ooh. Very just two cackling witches on the side. Now that cute waiter in the background, whoo, he is living the dream. He's like the officer bird on Judge Judy. Career high moment right there. Now I have to tell you that I paused this scene no less than 10 times because there was so much happening, I had to just gather who was saying what. But each time I did, one of the ladies' faces would be frozen on the screen. And all of them, well, I should say almost all of them, are stunning. Monique is flawless in her face. Either her skin has been transplanted directly from a newborn's butt cheeks, or her makeup artist has the airbrush technique like that of Michelangelo's paintbrush. I mean, it was perfection. Now, Karen, I mean, I hate to fault her on her comb forward hairdo because she can't help it. And I mean, she's got a receding hairline. Again, the opposite of Teresa Giudice. But I just don't know if my towel dried hair look is the best for her. But I don't know what is a good hairstyle for Karen. Like the only thing she can do to cover up whatever's going on in the front or whatever's not going on in the front would be a headband, right? Like Maddie on Sister Wives. But I think that's always a hair don't. So, I mean, what is a Karen to do? I don't know, maybe some stylists out there. I mean, you don't have to, you know, contact her directly because we don't do that in the orchard. But maybe we just toss it around in the Facebook group because I really think there's got to be a solution. If you can microblade eyebrows, can you microblade hair in the front? Okay, total tangent. Back to our regularly scheduled programming. Giselle now stands up to leave and she's got that stupid shirt that Free Karen, Free Uncle Ben, again, stolen from Atlanta. And then it also says tax reform. Now, I think that was low. It only made Giselle look like a nasty bitch, and I immediately thought less of Robin when Robin goes along with it and she just starts giggling. It's like the cool girl table in middle school, which, yuck. I like to think I'm more like a Monique or Ashley, like, hey, I still think you're shady in your Party City G.I. Jane outfit, but to print up a shirt and walk around laughing in a public restaurant. It's just low down immature. And then when they came back to Karen in the car, we're like, oh, we were just joking. No, it didn't land how they thought it would. So now they're just trying to cover their tracks. I can't stand those two now. So now let's go over to Candace's condo. She's squeezing her man's face and messing with him. I don't think any guy likes having his face touched. Have you ever noticed that? I really just started noticing this in the past couple of years. It is the quickest way to get a man out of a room. And to be honest, I've used it to get Dave out of the room when I wanted to watch TV. Like, just start getting clingy, squish their face between your hands. I think it triggers men back to their birth moment and it flicks the switch to flee and evacuate. Works like a charm. Trust me on this. Now jump over to Monique's house, her housekeeper or nanny. She better get a really good alarm system for this family because I'm going to need to steal Monique's kids so I can squeeze them and cuddle them. Her daughter, oh my God, so cute, those cheeks. I need to squish her. Move my family to Atlanta, Monique. I will be your nanny for free, for real. I agree that they need to make another baby or find that third one that I'm still convinced that they had last season because they make the most adorable minis. Now, Ashley shows up and they go out to the pool to talk about this white t-shirt party Monique is throwing for Chris's 40th. Okay. That is my kind of party. If all I have to do is wear a white t-shirt, it'll probably be last year's Old Navy and it will absolutely have stains, but a party with a dress code to dress like the birthday boy. Interesting. Also interesting, why were there no umbrellas out there? I mean, you have this multi-million dollar house, all these things, and you don't have anything to shade your pool area? It was very strange. Okay, well, umbrellas and deckware aside, Monique is talking to Ashley and she's giving her advice, which she is using her situation where her mother-in-law called her a heifer to compare it to Ashley's where her husband is paying her mom's rent. What we did get to find out is why there's so much tension with that. Turns out Ashley's mom said she wasn't going to stay with the guy that she's with, and that was the one stipulation they gave her about buying her the house. She had to break up with this guy, and her mom didn't follow through. So knowing this, and then Monique using her mother-in-law situation, this is just a totally different situation that Monique is giving her advice on that has nothing to do with Monique and Chris choosing who they want as their family. It was just a weird comparison. It was just a stretch of a conversation to make into a scene. Well, here comes Candace into the scene and she's got some cigars and then the swimsuits come out. I'm triggered by swimsuits right now because summer is just around the corner despite the snow on the ground outside my window. But I would rather go bungee jumping off of Niagara Falls than wear a swimsuit. And you know me, I think carousels can be a little too speedy and risky for my liking. So seeing these three in their perfect swimsuits, I was already pissed off. And then the cigars came out. Was that a little much for anyone else? I feel like Candace is that girl who says she loves hanging out with guys more than girls because she's a cool girl and she likes beer and football. But she really doesn't. Like, she just says that because she thinks it makes her look different and sexy. This scene, like I said, it was just a stretch of everything. Now, over in some boutique, Giselle is tooting her own horn about her Giselle Christine Beauté line and some Hamptons party she's going to. She's not going to go to Monique's party for Chris because the Hamptons are where it's at. And by it's, we don't mean Bethany's investment property on the highway. Giselle is also telling her friend about this press conference and her retelling of it. I don't like Giselle, but she can be very funny. The way the editors took what Giselle was saying and they matched up her voice to Karen's lips moving, like one of those Scholastic movies that you would watch as a kid in school. I mean, shading Karen down to the women having to shell peanuts. I mean, she didn't even give them cocktail peanuts or like a nice mixed nut medley. The peanuts, like I said, do go with the whole elephant in the room theme from Real Housewives of Atlanta. So bitches stole their season's theme even. So let's jump over to Robin's house, and Jesus, her hair was all kinds of messed up. It was red and yellow, and I'm not exaggerating. Maybe this is a trend that hasn't made its way to the Midwest yet, but if and when it does, nope, I'm sticking to my normal protocol because it looked like she took a cue from Ty's room on Trading Spaces last week. Just say no to contrasting colors on your hair, ladies. Now, Robin and Juan have moved into their new house, and it looked really nice inside, but they have a shitload of stuff in their garage, which makes me believe they sunk a small fortune or a large fortune into furnishing this house purely for the cameras. I wouldn't be surprised at all if they had hired a staging company to set it all up because the way that everything was laid out, especially that boys' room, it looked like a model home, like not functional, purely for looks. And you can always tell by the bedding. It's those itchy comforter sets, you know what I'm talking about. They use those so that they don't get wrinkled and they can be returned at whatever store or rental company that they bought it from when the house sells. Now, not much more at Robin's house because, hello, she's boring. She needs to be replaced. It's all her trying hard to prove that she's not broke anymore, which is hilarious considering that's what she's slamming Karen for. Ugh, Robin is a snore and a brat. Let's start a petition. Hashtag replace Robin. Now, Candace, she's dress shopping. Her mom thinks she's on Say Yes to the Dress, and Candace thinks that this is the talent portion of the competition for a pageant. Pulling out the fake tears over putting on a dress. Ugh, I am already over Candace. Now, you guys, color me shocked because Ashley's restaurant, Oz, was packed. And I've heard several of you tell me that you've been there and it was packed. I really, really want to go now. Is it like in DC? Someone tell me, because I will totally go to Oz if anyone else wants to go. Like, anyone want to meet me there? I'm afraid I'm going to get there and I'll be like, anyone, anyone, Bueller, Bueller. Like, what's a good time to go to DC? What time during the year? I don't know, probably not summer, right? Summer's probably blazing hot. But if anyone wants to meet me there, seriously, let's make this happen. I got to get to Oz. I like to have a little something to look forward to, a little something to dream about. So let's do this, all right? Okay, well, let's finally get to Monique's party. There's Chris, my human didgeridoo, wearing a purple shirt to his own white shirt party.
I'm still losing weight. I need to put on whatever fits me.
Title of my forthcoming autobiography. Now, everyone looks cute except Robin, who always seems to miss the mark with her wardrobe choices. She arrives in jean shorts and gym shoes. But it's not just Robin, because out of the SUV pops Charisse. Ugh, Sasha herself. She's wearing ridiculous shoes that there's no way she can walk in them. She's got a hard time walking as it is just keeping her balance. Remember her little Segway in the kitchen last year? But she is such a special kind of moron because Charisse thinks that everyone loves her, which makes her not only a special kind of moron, but the best kind of moron. Well, then Karen and Ray show up, and I guess I didn't pay enough attention to Candace to realize that she hadn't met Robin or Karen yet. Robin just came off as such a cold beast to her when Candace introduced herself. Like, what the hell, Robin? Why are you acting like your shit doesn't stink? I think Candace is annoying too, but all she did was say hello. Like, take several seats, Robin. You know what? Actually, don't, because her garage is already filled with extra ones. Now, fast forward to Chris's dad. Oh my God. I need to hug this man and just keep him company. He had such a kind face, and you could just tell his dad is a good person. If someone finds out like his dad actually murdered someone, just don't tell me. I love this kind of fan fiction in my life because it's the little side characters like this that keep the shows fun and keep it light. It's like seeing Kelly Dodd's mom like tinkering around in the background on Real Housewives of Orange County. Like, we just need them around. Okay, stay on target, Jody. Okay, Michael talking to Karen and Ray. Now, I've heard some mixed things about this. I thought it was actually kind of a nice drunk Michael moment. I don't think he even remembered that he was mic'd at this point. He's sunburnt. He's been drinking all day. He's not even wearing his own shirt anymore. He's in that lovey-dovey, let's all just get along stage of drunkenness. But Karen has a death grip on Ray, and she's trying to move Michael, like, move right along, because she knows that Ray is about to start talking, and he already messed up once this season, and Karen's going to make him sleep in the closet again if he flubs his lines. So let's go over to the white couch with a white dress. Monique is pouring red wine. My watch alerted me that I was near my target heart rate zone. So yay for calorie burn, but damn it, don't do that to me. Red wine near white upholstery. You can't pull that stuff on me, even if it's on TV. But here we have Robin being lame again.
Monique, you liked an Instagram meme that had a picture of me.
Friggin' Robin. And then she says Monique is two-faced, but she's the one at Monique's house drinking and eating for free all day long. And you know what, Robin? On top of you just being a hypocrite, grow a tougher skin. You are on a housewife show. People are going to post shit about you. And even if Monique's family is running a fan page, so what? Good for her. Go ahead and open one yourself. No one said you couldn't. Okay, so Monique takes off. So Robin then goes outside and she runs into Ashley. Now, at first I was like, ah, yes, Ashley, tell her off. Tell her she's being a hypocrite. Hold her feet to the fire. But then Ashley started saying that Robin shouldn't stay with Juan and it's not conducive for a good life. Glass houses, girl. Stay in your lane with the car Michael bought you. It kind of reminded me of how Megan King Edmonds used to talk about being a mom before she had her own kids. Don't talk about stuff that you have no place talking about.
Go big, Chris. It's your birthday. Go big, Chris. It's my birthday. I'm having a birthday.
If I were Robin, that jolly purple birthday boy would have stolen my heart, not convinced me to leave. She even missed Candace's fiance diving off the balcony into that pool, which that guy was just totally wasted, and Candace was about to lose her shit. This is not the image Candace wants to project in her first season as a housewife. The guy almost slipped too, which was the best part. He said he did a backflip, but it was more like a recovery turned trust fall into the pool. Okay, so next week, Giselle attempts to be Danielle Steele. We'll see. Now coming up next, Teen Mom OG and Married at First Sight. Teen Mom OG Reunion Part 1 starts out with some very serious music. Dun, 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 dun. Our host, Dr. Drew, comes out. He gives us a little pep talk, a little walk down memory lane. A season for love, joy, anger, tears. To every season, turn, turn, turn. Okay, Dr. Drew, I love you, but let's cut the shit. The reunions are a time when the girls get an MTV budget glam squad, a new romper from Forever 21, and a free weekend in New York. And we get to see Ryan be a real dick. So let's see how close to the mark we get this time. First up, Macy and Caitlin. Now, let me first address the stripper shoes in the room. What the hell was Caitlin doing in those things? If you didn't see them, you have got to go back. Patent leather, they had to be at least 4 inches, like a wedge platform, way too narrow. There's no heel on it. It's just a real hazard for anyone to wear. Something you'd see on a TJ Maxx clearance shoe rack. Okay, now do you get the full picture? I'm also curious why everyone is dressed for 3 different seasons. Dr. Drew is in a sweater and a blazer. Kate has 3 layers on. And then Macy is wearing a sleeveless jumpsuit like it's a steamy 95. Get it together, wardrobe people. Help the ladies out. Let's at least get some consistency on set. Now, that out of the way, Dr. Drew starts by asking the girls what they think of Farrah quitting. Well, neither seem to really give a crap, and Kate says it's the path Farrah's been wanting to take for a while, so good for her. Well, she means porn, right? The big secret that isn't a secret, that Farrah's, quote, leaked sex tape wasn't leaked at all, just a sex tape. Wow, who would have thought? Well, it also turns out that Farrah wouldn't allow Sophia to talk to any of the other moms. Just further concern for Sophia. Farrah has this thing where she puts a barrier between everyone and Sophia. Remember with the tutor just this past season? And then even before that, she was pulled out of public school. Farrah put her in a private, small, maybe it was like a Montessori school. I don't know. But even then, that was too close of a relationship for Farrah, and she pulled her out to homeschool. God, I hope someone besides Farrah is keeping an eye on her, for Sophia's sake and for all of ours. Well, Kate also says that she's relieved Matt is out of the picture. Yeah, we all are, Dr. Drew. Perhaps you should encourage production to have a segment on the show where they let people call in and express their opinions. Kate and Macy are never going to really say what they're thinking, so why not let people like us do it for them? I think it would be far more entertaining and a hell of a lot more honest. Someone just needs to say, hey, Matt was disgusting. Look at his nasty ass crater face and gross plaque encrusted teeth. You think with the thousands of dollars that he stole from Amber, he could have made a quickie appointment with a dermatologist and had some lasering or something done? I'd love to do that stuff myself, but I don't have thousands of dollars to just shit away. Dr. Drew, again, call us. Well, now the show takes a right turn when Dr. Drew has Kate alone on stage. Without even asking her a question, Caitlin just starts bawling. Again, I know I'm saying Dr. Drew's name a lot. I really do love him. I'm like a huge Dr. Drew fan, but I just don't think he is the right fit for this show. Because he looks at Caitlin and he says, I think I know why you're upset. Drew, come on, you can do better. We all know why she's upset. We just watched a whole season of Caitlin ducking out of Nova's life for months at a time. The only thing that Dr. Drew was able to get out of Caitlin that made me feel slightly better was that she had a sense that she might be repeating the abandonment she went through with her own daughter. I don't always like to toot my own horn, but I'm going to this time. I mentioned the same thing last week. I'm fearful of that too. But yes, I know Caitlin needs help, and seeking mental health help is a good thing. But I just think, and I know many of us think the same thing, you gotta at least try to follow an intensive outpatient program close to home. I mean, that is an essential step to getting back to real life. Real life is not living in an inpatient facility thousands of miles away from home on a semi-permanent basis. Now, Dr. Drew brings us up to current day and asks Caitlin, how are you doing right now? She says she switched medications and her previous ones weren't doing anything because she was metabolizing them too quickly. Oh, and she was smoking pot. And in Drew's words, quote, a ton of pot. Minor detail, you think? Okay. I think I need to metabolize this new fact because it was just skimmed over very easily. And you know what? I got to bring this back to the droopy dog therapist. Where the hell has she been for the last 9 years? What has she been doing? Caitlin and Tyler have never been in a worse spot, and it's all the same issues that have never been dealt with. Anyone have intel on that therapist? I'm honestly pissed off about it for Caitlin and Tyler and their daughter, because it's people's lives, man. Remember when Kate said something about hurting herself during a session on camera and the therapist didn't say anything? Aren't you required by law to at least report that or something? Now, I realize that I am analyzing a professional analyzer. So while I'm at it, just let me analyze Nova's attachment to Kate. Kate says Nova never wants to leave her side now that she's back, and she doesn't like when Caitlin drops her off for preschool, and she begs mommy, don't leave me. Ugh, as a mother, that breaks my heart to even say. Well, Caitlin, let me tell you why. It's because you would drop Nova off and then take off for 2 months without her knowing. Of course, she's going to be clinging to you. I'd cling to my mom too, and I'm 23 years old, plus 14. Now, I think Dr. Drew tried to drop a big hint that went right over Kate's head. He said it's normal for Nova to feel this way, but make sure she's getting a big dose of attention and attachment when they are together. He's onto something. Now, I don't know this for sure. This is a snarky recap podcast, so take this for what it is. I just have this gut feeling coming from my experience as a mom and watching Caitlin for years with Nova. I think she's the type of mom who parents from the couch. Like, she may say, "Oh, that's really cute, Nova," or "Go play with your dolls," or be around her when she's playing. But I don't think Caitlin engages with Nova. Maybe it's because she doesn't want to, or maybe it's because she doesn't know how, but I'd hope that with all the resources Caitlin has at her disposal, someone would be able to help her with that, if it is an issue at all. Again, I am just speculating. Now, let's jump to Amber's segment. She's filming remotely because she's pregnant, in case you didn't hear. And again, this is something I said last week. Look at Andrew in those flashbacks. He looks like a different person. He was slimmer. He was less hairy. He was less scary. Amber picks some shitty men, and they all get uglier when they're with her in that house. Most men start looking better once they're with their women because the woman makes sure that he showers and wears matching clothes and pants without pleats. But apparently, Amber's vagina contains the Benjamin Button gene for reverse ugliness. Benjamin Button is making a comeback in the podcast this week. Now, right out of the gate, Amber is pissed because something Gary said about her being an absent mom. So she takes issue with this 2 months number where she wasn't seeing Leah. And she said it wasn't 2 months, it was only 1 month. Amber, that is still too long. You live, what, like 20, 40 minutes away? You don't have anywhere else to be, nothing to do. Get your ass in one of your cars and go see your kid. Her BS excuse about being depressed because she broke up with Matt after 3 years. That has nothing to do with your child, Amber. Leah doesn't care, and she shouldn't have to be worried about her mom being depressed or whatever. You are a parent, whether you are sick or hurt, happy, it doesn't matter. There's no days off when you're a parent. It's not Leah's job or responsibility to understand your issues with your freaking breakup. Now, here's where it gets even messier for Amber's defense of not seeing Leah for whatever length of a time. We'll just say a month, okay? Dr. Drew even jumps in to defend Amber not seeing Leah because Amber says she was drinking, that she was off her meds, and she was, her words, she was spiraling. Oh, and we should applaud her for making the right choice and being responsible to not have Leah around because she knows from her past and rehab what to do. Bullshit. If that were true and Amber was being a responsible spiraler or whatever, then she wouldn't have jumped into a new relationship during this time. Dr. Drew has said for years that recovering addicts should never start a new relationship or make big life changes. And here's Amber breaking up with Matt, jumping directly into a new relationship, and getting pregnant. No. We cannot let Amber get a pass on this one. And then, you know, when Big Andrew sits down with his hairy ass and his gigantic head on Amber's shoulder, it's just such a show for attention in the cameras. They both seem so slimy and phony to me. Andrew says Gary is manipulative, and Gary, he can be. But for as old as Andrew is, don't be stupid. Andrew, stay out of it. You're manipulative too, because if you hate drama, then you wouldn't be stirring it up. Stop it. Now, I was all fired up. Clearly, I still am. And just when we were getting into it, Amber and Andrew say goodbye, and we come back with Macy and Taylor. Really, the whole recap of the entire season is all about Ryan's drug use with a little dash of potential adoption. And then Taylor's sitting there, that frickin' beard. He's got to chop it off. I actually love facial hair on guys. The only time I ever saw my husband without facial hair was when he accidentally took it down too low, and I couldn't look at him for 3 days until it grew back. Thankfully, you can hear his hair growing. It grows so fast, so we were able to make it through that rough patch. But Taylor's is just gross. Keep a beard. By all means, I like a beard, but just trim that extra 3.5 inches off. Now, there's lots of rehashing of Ryan's drug use and why Macy wanted him to take that drug screening before he takes Bentley. No need to really go into detail because I think we can all agree that it's pretty reasonable on her part to request that. But backstage is where I want to go. In the great words of Liz Lemon, I want to go to there. Ryan is muttering under his breath that he wishes he had his old phone. The classic line of every defendant on Judge Judy, the text message is in my old phone. Okay, Ryan. Now, Mackenzie is the new Jen, coaching her little old man boy to tell Dr. Drew, and just make sure you tell the teacher that your mommy said you could go home if you don't feel good. And I'm the most smartest boy, so I don't have to listen to anyone except my mommy. Had a moment there. I'm back. All right, well, let's hear from Ryan for real, not just the voice that he hears in his head. Welcome to the stage, the newly married and newly expecting Ryan and Mackenzie. Now, you've seen the screenshot I took, and that was the moment after Dr. Drew said that. Mackenzie is sitting there smiling, and Ryan is scowling, dead in the eyes, arms crossed. You got to see this picture. Ryan is cold as a corpse, and his fame-hungry wife is just stupid as can be smiling away. Dr. Drew asks Ryan why he won't take a drug test, and he says he will take a piss test but not a hair follicle test because the drugs stay in your system for a while, so why would he do a hair one when he knows that it would come out negative? What I hate more than that answer is that he's a 30-something-year-old and he's saying piss test. Does that bother anyone else? Like, I know it's very hypocritical that I swear like a sailor and the word piss bothers me, but I'm not sitting in front of a doctor on international TV. Now, thankfully, the doctor himself says, well, why not take a hair follicle test now because it's been quite a while? And Ryan says he doesn't need to because it's not an issue because things are normal. What? Drew, Macy was just sitting in front of you saying she thinks he's using and they're concerned. Why are you letting him skate by on this? Why? What the hell? Ryan is like Kim Zolciak and Andy's Sarah Huckabee Sanders comparison when anyone questions him about drug testing. He even brings up that he had drugs in the car with him and he had drug charges against him, but somehow that just slips on by and no one calls him on it. To be honest, I was just, what's the word, aghast? It sounds very old-fashioned, but I was aghast watching Ryan talk about what's been going on. He said he had prescriptions for pills, but it was for recreation. Drew was like, so did your doctors document anything? And then Ryan's like, oh, well, they're all in jail now. Like, it's no big deal. No, this is not just normal, everyday stuff that we're all just supposed to know and not be shocked by. Ryan's been going to pill mills, and now we see why these charges and being involved in cases all comes together. Now, I am not an expert on this, and I'm going purely by memory, so please jump in and post the facts that you know in our Facebook, Real TV Orchard of Snark, or on Twitter, at Real TV Pod, but there was something posted about Ryan testifying about these pill mills in exchange for some lessened or dropped charges, which is why his charges weren't made public, why Macy didn't know anything, something like that. So this is not just poor little old Ryan the addict. He is into some shady stuff, and thank God Macy is keeping Bentley away from him, or at least out of his car. Now we get to the part with the therapist. It would be comical if it weren't so unbelievable. Ryan and Mackenzie are trying to sell us how there's no therapist in the state of Tennessee that will see Ryan. And Mackenzie tries to make it out like this therapist was so mean to them. He said Ryan was selfish because he was an addict and he's selfish on the show and blah, 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 and he has to quit his job. So, well, number one, I don't think that's exactly what went down. Number two, Ryan is selfish. And number three, you don't want him to quit his job, Mackenzie, because then you wouldn't be sitting on stage in your new outfit and getting your weekly allowance to get your hair done. So what about a 12-step? What about referrals? What about staying the whole 30 days instead of 21? Well, Ryan says the facility said that they wanted him to have his father stay with Bentley, so they just let him go. Yeah, all of a sudden, rehabs are making Father's Day a reason to graduate early. Okay. Well, now we got to talk about the wedding shade that Dr. Drew just threw in there at the last minute. I would bet my life on it that Mackenzie made a stink about wanting to set the record straight that they had a great wedding day. She's all pissy because she said the wedding was edited to only include, quote, a few little moments that weren't arguments, they were disagreements, and everyone else on the show gets to have their fairy tale wedding, but we didn't. So there it is, the reason they had the second wedding. Mackenzie wanted a teen mom wedding like all the other moms who the show was actually about, and it backfired on her. And you know what, Mackenzie? Even those little moments should not have happened. She's the only one editing things out, like the fact that they don't drink or have alcohol in their home, but they were both drinking at the wedding. Now, we think it's already hot on the set, but then we go backstage where now Ryan and Mackenzie are pouting that they aren't going to go on stage with Macy because she's a liar. Even the producer Daya knows what's up because she and Macy are talking off camera, still mic'd, and they know it because they're good at their jobs. Macy has proof that she does answer his text and she has it on her phone. Ryan is a liar and he deletes her responses. And I think Jen knows it too because she's got her back to Mackenzie in the dressing room and she looks directly at Dr. Drew and she says, there's a lot that goes on between Macy and Ryan that no one knows about. And by no one, she means Mackenzie. Now, next week is gonna be good. That's for certain. And then after part two, Teen Mom 2 starts up in May. Yes, that means I get to snark on Leah and the girlses. I cannot wait. All right, let's get to some Married at First Sight now because this week's episode was super messy. All right, last week we left off with Dr. Jessica meeting with John and Molly. Molly was confronted with the recording John had of her calling him disgusting, and they all agreed that parting ways would be best for everyone. I wasn't able to actually watch this episode live, which was killing me. I was feeling sick to my stomach when I was seeing tweets about what was going on, and I had a real, I hate this term, but hey, it's true, FOMO moment. So I had to just take a step away, prepared myself to watch in the morning, and that's just what I did. I worked out, took a shower, had a cup of hot coffee, just optimal conditions for cringe watching. I fired up that DVR and started with the words of wisdom from Dr. Pepper, who we need now more than ever. We start off with Shawnice and Jeffy and their little dog Kiki. They're getting all cozy. A lot of mixed time frame voiceovers and insights on what it's meant to be married at first sight. Jeffy appears to be saying that he wants to be married and has feelings for Shawnice, but then he's asking questions like, what if we're together for 5 years and we still haven't fallen in love? Shawnice took that better than I would have. I am an overthinker and I would have analyzed the shit out of that and went deep into a Google hole finding relationship boards and stuff like that. Now let's jump over to John. It's day 52. He tells us Molly left to stay with her mom and they're pretty much on the same page that it's over for good. Now we see Molly, she's meeting with her sister, and she fills her sister in how things really took a turn in Florida, that they got into a big blowout, and for her, John making the recording was the final straw. She said that when she and John talked later that night, he made it very clear that he wants a divorce, so that's what they're going to do. Meanwhile, John meets with his friend Blake, and he tells him about making the recording of Molly, and that's the proof that he needed that he's not crazy. He feels like Molly threw herself into this and then immediately put her walls up. He was even further frustrated because the experts kept telling them to keep doing what they were doing, but things never got better, so it is what it is, and it is a divorce. Well, now it's day 53, and we head over to the Buckleys. Mr. Buckley is oh, babying something out of the oven. He's also whipped up some mashed potatoes because it's guy's night with Jeff D and John. Man, ladies, can't you relate? Your man's buddies are coming over, so he starts steaming up the kitchen with a potato masher. Typical guy's night. And don't worry, there's also some cold Brita filtered water being served along with a grueling mash tonight. And the chef is even wearing his The Mr. half of the Mr. and Mrs. t-shirt set. Again, reminds us of all of our husbands. Am I right, gals? Okay, moving beyond the brown ombre meal. It's the ultimate of awkwardness as Ryan and Jeff D arrive, sit down, and Ryan starts saying how amazing the first day of the trip to New York was. And Jeff D piggybacks that Vermont was just lovely, they got lots of sleep. And then Ryan asked John how Florida was. Jeff D had to have known what was coming. If you watch his body language, his eyes were darting all around before John ever spoke. He even looked directly into the camera at one point and he couldn't stop smiling. So John tells them how he recorded Molly and then he showed it to Jessica. Kind of weird that he didn't refer to her as Dr. Jessica, but call me old fashioned. And that Jessica told Molly that she's emotionally and verbally abusive. Well, that's when Jeff D threw his head back and started laughing. I don't actually think Jeff D thought it was funny. I think he's just one of those people that laughs and smiles when things get weird or tense. But John confirms that they've already ended it. He and Molly will 100% end in divorce. This is where Ryan starts yapping, and he just went off the rails. Apparently, Ryan's been thinking that he and Jackie may end up like John and Molly. Funny how he freaked the hell out when Jackie said the same thing weeks ago. And now he's even at the point where he knows it's an unhealthy relationship because he's been in others in the past. And if he were to break things off with Jackie, he wouldn't be upset or heartbroken at all. And there it is, the switch. The coming in hot and then the switch it off and immediately cold. We all saw it coming. Now, I was hard on Jeff D in the beginning, but he's making all the right kinds of sense now. Some of that was my snap judgment, and a good portion was also the editing, which we know can be proven, but I'll admit it when I was wrong. I was wrong about Jeff D's maturity and respect, especially how he handles situations once he's given time to process his emotions. Again, I see a lot of similarities actually between Jeff D and my husband. I think they're similar. Jeff D's the type of guy that just needs time, needs a breather to take things in, and that's why he was such a weirdo in the beginning. But I have to give it to him now. He's calling Ryan on Ryan being insensitive and questioning him, like, we're not going to feel bad if you just leave Jackie and she's hurt. Even John is like, what's going on? Ryan's all about her one day and now he's over her. But the thing that killed me the most about this scene was that Ryan is wearing the Mr. shirt like he's husband of the year, but then he's being a dick playing hot potato with Jackie's heart. Now, while we're all left slack-jawed and bug-eyed over what's going down at Ryan's place, we're brought over to Shawnice's house where she's prepping for a girl's night. I spied some fresh salsa in the little plastic refrigerator container, the only way to buy salsa, people. And some sour cream, so I got really excited and hungry. Which, side note, I had Halo Top oatmeal cookie ice cream the other night. Holy shit, it's incredible, you guys. I would splurge on that even if it were not healthy-ish or healthier than full-fat ice cream. I wouldn't buy it full price because I'm not Bill Gates, for Christ's sake. But next time it's on sale, trust me, if you see it, buy it. Tell me if you see it somewhere on sale. It is so good. Okay, so back to ladies' night. I was hungry. Okay, it's confirmed. It's Taco Tuesday, but I didn't see any tacos, which who pays attention to details? Now, Jackie and Molly arrive. Molly says that she's been in a bad place for the last week. Hey, I mean, not only are you moving back with your parents, but you got this John stuff to deal with. That sucks. Now, it really killed me to see Jackie all happy and beaming, knowing that Ryan is just slamming her at that very moment. But whatever, let's get to Molly and John. Molly finally speaks up and just leads with, let me start with, John and I are not staying together 150% without a question. Now, Jackie and Shawnice are shocked. Actually, Shawnice was shocked. Jackie didn't seem that surprised, but the whole scene was strange because there's obviously something we don't know. I think Molly and Jackie at least have been talking behind the scenes, and Molly knows what was going on. Which makes it even weirder because Molly is talking like she would still want to try if there were more time to build a physical attraction, but I don't necessarily believe her. If she's not attracted to him, which she clearly isn't and has told us, then fine. But just own up to it and just say it. I'm just not attracted to him. I wish I was, but I'm not. I feel like we're better as friends. Okay, commercial break that transitions us back to Ryan and Jackie's. Wow. So Jackie comes in to give Ryan a kiss and he turns his head away. So she asks him, okay, what's up with the cheek? And he says, because she has lipstick on. And you have a The Mister shirt on, you asshole. And for the record, if Jackie had lipstick on, it matched her natural lip shade perfectly and was semi-matte because she looked au naturel to me. Okay, I need a deep breath on this one because that scene with Ryan and Jackie on that love seat. Height of awkwardness. I felt like I was there having the conversation myself. You can tell right off the bat that Ryan has his mind made up about breaking things off with Jackie because when Jackie mentions Molly, he says, well, she made her mind up, you know. But you know what's coming. When he said, you know, Jeffy and I were talking and he and I mentioned that, you know what, no matter what, we'll have this experience to look back on. Ryan's problem right there is twofold. He speaks before he thinks it through. And he thinks he's smarter than Jackie. Jackie is smart, though, and she catches his slip up and says, wait, you mean you and Jeffy or you and me? Ryan's face changes colors, and I'm not exaggerating. If you still have it on your DVR, go back. It's at minute 31. He goes from pale to deep red. Jackie herself is caught off guard because she just caught Ryan in his waffling and doublespeak that he does. They had that session with Dr. Pepper. He had promised to stick it out. He was going to make compromises. Then he just said that they had a great trip and he was calling her his perfect wife. And then somewhere in the last 12 hours, he's gone to not wanting to stick it through anymore. And you can see it in Jackie's eyes that she's adding and carrying the numbers, putting the tangram puzzle together, and she sees it. And she's not afraid to not see it anymore. She's at the pissed point, and I would be too if I were her. She left in the morning thinking that they were in one place, and Ryan changed his mind, so now she's left blindsided. Well, then I felt blindsided when straight from another commercial break, we get John in his car singing about being sexy. And what was that Mini Cooper? Okay, Lifetime, I'm only human. Slow it down. I can only handle so much snark at one time. But the Mini Cooper, though. Okay, well, Mama's J-Man is coming to visit, and surprise, Molly isn't here. Because they're getting a divorce. Now, John's mom is super cute. She looks so sad and shocked to hear the news, and even more sad about this whole thing is that John's mom and Molly's mom became friends, and it just adds, like, this other layer of complexity and awkwardness. Now, while John and his mom are talking things through, Jackie is helping Molly pack up the rest of her stuff at the apartment that they shared. Molly says she sent a long text to John, but he didn't respond. And I feel like, oh, this is like Macy and Ryan from Teen Mom kind of a situation. Both sides want to play victim. There's no resolution to be had. I know there are people who dislike Molly and others who dislike John, okay? I clearly sway more to Molly's side because I think John has said disrespectful things to her too. So in saying that, I think they're both responsible for how things played out. And remember, you guys, before you send me these fired up emails and stuff, you guys, it's a TV show, okay? And this right on the title says Snarky Recap Podcast. So take it at face value. I don't follow these people on social media. I'm not contacting their employers or them and stuff. So just relax. We are here to snark. Okay, so Jackie isn't just there to help pack. She needs someone to talk about the bombshell Ryan laid on her unexpectedly. What I find refreshing about this is how Jackie relates what went down between her and Ryan last night. She doesn't embellish. She doesn't change the story up. Her current husband, on the other hand, he doesn't do the same, which is why he is likely getting the advice that he's getting from his friends. He makes Jackie out to be this needy, irrational, bipolar psycho, instead of the level-headed, insightful person that Jackie really is. All right, let's jump back to Shawnice and Jeff D. They're bickering about whose car they were going to take and who's supposed to drive. They work it out and they end up laughing. Whatever, I don't care. But I do care more about Jeff D now. A little bit, because he has proven to be pretty normal. But more so because he was eating one of my favorite candies, the fruit-flavored Mentos. I freaking love those, especially the pink ones. And when you get a fresh pack and they're nice and soft, oh my God, they're so good. And here's a little tip if you are also a fan of them. If you get a roll that's kind of hard, you just hold the roll in your hand for like a minute. Boom, human slow cooker style, perfect level of chewiness. You didn't even realize you were going to get a free recipe today, did you? Look at that. I provide. Now, lastly, we're at Jackie and Ryan's where we're getting an open diary read aloud voiceover by Jackie. They're sitting there eating ice cream, a look on their faces like Ryan's star-spangled boxers just ran away from home. And once again, Ryan is wearing the most confusing of t-shirt choices. It's one that says Greek wife, happy life on it. What the hell kind of message are you trying to send, man? I can understand being a little confused in this process, a little hot, a little cold, but to be so unsympathetic in how you made your partner feel when you were having those emotional swings, that's what's troubling to me about Ryan's attitude. And then he gives her the necklace. Ooh, the necklace. What the hell was that? And not the necklace itself. Like, I thought that was kind of a cool sentiment, a cool gesture. But what was with Ryan clearly blowing off Jackie wanting to kiss him? She puckered up to him 3 times before he finally kissed her back. And you can tell he's pulling away. Oh, Jackie. Now, next week, it's decision day. Can't wait for it. Place your bets. Well, hey, that does it for this week. Thanks for another fun week of snarking on the shows we love and love to hate. Next week, I'll be back with some more of our favorite cringe watches. And remember, support Reality TV by heading over to patreon.com/realitytvpod and talk with me and my hilarious compadres at Reality TV Pod on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Remember, see something, say something, and stay salty.